from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with the passage of the New York State budget. This year, the legalization of marijuana got much of the attention, and understandably so. There will be debates about how to divide revenues, who gets licensed, how to draw certain lines. But state legislators had a lot more to do. They had to consider education funding, taxes, economic development, small business support. They worked on mental health and substance abuse and more. Next hour, we welcome members of the New York State Senate. This hour, we welcome members of the New York State Assembly. Later this hour, we will welcome Stephen Hawley, Jen Lunsford, Damon Meeks. And this half hour, we welcome members of the Assembly from your local delegation. Sarah Clark is with us. Thank you for being back with us, Sarah.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Member of the Assembly Josh Jensen is back with us. Josh, thanks for making the time.
Pleasure's all mine, Evan.
And member of the Assembly Harry Brunson also with us. Harry, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Evan. Glad to be here.
This day on Connections, both of these hours, divided up the State Senate next hour, Assembly this hour, and Republicans and Democrats together sharing their thoughts. So when we talk about priorities, when we talk about accomplishments, and frankly, sometimes when we just talk about what can get done, it kind of matters what party you're in, and there may be some different perspectives here on what was even possible. But I will ask all three of our guests this half hour to start by just laying out what you think are the most important either achievements or developments to come out of Albany in this budget session. Sarah Clark, let me start with you.
Sure. Two of the main things that prompted me to run were both making a full investment in our education and childcare, which both had huge, huge, huge wins in this year's budget. We obviously made another step up in our commitment on foundation aid and committed to a 3-year fully funded foundation aid process to make sure our schools are finally getting the resources they need, including desperately the Rochester City School District. So for me, that was like a huge win. It was one of the catalysts for why I even decided to run. And then the second is childcare, having 3 children of my own and understanding the cost that that is to families and the ecosystem that already existed and was barely getting by year to year was just totally thrown a curveball with COVID. And now we have an opportunity to just transform the system, make it affordable, make our providers have more of the resources they need. It's a $2.4 billion investment in childcare, and it's really just going to be game-changing. So.
And Assembly Member Clark, when you talk about foundation aid and education, can you just briefly explain to listeners maybe what is different in the 2021 budget that passed compared to recent years when it comes to how schools are funded and frankly, how much?
Yeah. So one of the biggest situations, foundation aid is this formula that's used to decide sort of the amount each school district is supposed to get. It came out of a lawsuit in 2008, maybe 2007, which was the Alliance for Quality Education and the Campaign for Equitable Education. That really was saying we weren't doing enough to invest in our students and we needed to do more. We're constitutionally mandated by in the state to provide education for everyone and a equal and equitable education for everyone. So foundation aid, though, never, because of the downturns in 2010, never sort of got to the point where we were 100% paying what each district was supposed to get. And for years, we've been fighting to sort of get back on track with this. It will mean this: some districts get all they're supposed to get, but most districts get considerably under it, and particularly here in Monroe County. So if you look at what is owed, there were millions and millions of dollars owed to school districts over the years that they were not getting. This year, there'll be a 60% floor, so no one will get below 60% of their foundation aid. Next year, it'll move up to 80%, and then the third year, it'll move up to 100%. So this is a huge, huge win. How much each school district gets depends on the formula, which has a lot of factors in it, including poverty, including English as a second language learner, special education, a whole bunch of different factors. But all of our districts across the county will benefit from this.
Assemblymember Jensen, what are the headlines to you coming out of this session?
Well, I think certainly there was benefit. There was some very good items in this year's budget. Certainly the support that our local school districts, especially the ones in the 134th district, are going to receive. I'm very happy with that. The fact that the legislature rejected the governor's consolidation of service aid for our school districts. And as the ranking member on the Assembly Libraries Committee, I was very happy to see that we held library aid steady and increased capital funding that's available for libraries across the state. But I am concerned with the tremendous size of this year's budget, that while we were able to fund a lot of very good items, are we putting our state in a weaker financial situation when we no longer have federal dollars coming in 2023-2024?
In other words, does it sound like, tell me if I'm interpreting this correctly, Assemblymember Jensen, the concern is that during this pandemic there's more federal support, but if the state is making financial commitments, it may not have the underpinnings to pay for it in years to come?
Correct. Yeah, we got $25 billion from the federal government this year, plus an additional $16 billion that wasn't spent last year and was reappropriated. And my concern is, as we're adding additional programs, increasing funding, which is important and is needed when we listen to our colleagues, my concern is when people become more reliant and expect this funding to occur, when we no longer have that support from Washington, are we going to have to either make substantial increases in revenue, which means raising taxes, raising fees, or are we going to have to gut these programs that we've been celebrating over the past week and a half?
Okay, and so I will have a chance to ask both Assemblymembers Clark and Bronson if they are concerned about that and maybe what mechanisms they think there are to deal with that coming forward here. Before we do that, let me just ask Assemblymember Bronson for what you think are the headlines and maybe some points of emphasis that you had during the session.
Sure. So first of all, you know, let's put this in context. The COVID-19 pandemic has absolutely ravaged our communities. It's changed our way of life, and it further exposed deep inequities in our society. So we approached, the majority approached this budget in a way that we wanted to deliver a budget that would help people and businesses in need. And we delivered a robust, people-centered budget. And it has historic increases in education funding, as Assemblymember Clark just talked about. We invest in workforce development and job training. We offer significant rent and mortgage relief for our homeowners. We help small businesses rebound, and we're ensuring access to quality, affordable health care. The budget directs critical aid to our families. And, you know, I want to thank my colleagues for collaborating and delivering a budget that I've not seen in the first decade that I've worked in the Assembly. Two areas that I worked on significantly as Economic Development Committee Chair, We delivered a $1 billion small business recovery relief that includes small businesses, which is a $800 million grant program, a $25 million grant program specifically for restaurant industry. We're helping the musical and theater production industry, and the arts recovery grant program will help our arts industry. So there's a lot in there that will help our small businesses. That helps them because oftentimes those are mom and pop stores throughout the main streets in the city and in the town and all over Monroe County. But those businesses in turn employ a lot of our family members. And in addition, because we know there will be businesses that still will not survive, so we have to develop an opportunity for those workers to make a transition into a new occupation. So we have a $50 million workforce development grant program that is going to be helpful. We have continued to fund our apprenticeship programs and things of that nature because our families need jobs. And some of them are going to be making a transition, so we need to either upskill or retrain them so that they can take on different jobs.
Okay, and let me just ask to specifically understand how this kind of mixed up in this $1 billion, you said there's $25 million for the New York State Restaurant Resiliency Grant Program. If I run a restaurant that is on the edge here, how do I apply for this? How do I know if I'm eligible? How do I get the help?
These programs are going to be run through the Economic Development Council, the Economic Development department. And so there'll be an application that you can make. If you're a restaurant, you actually are entitled to apply for that type of grant, or you can go in the small business grant program. They're all going to be all of them are going to be run through economic development. And there will be a preference for the micro businesses. So that would be 10 or lower employers. There will be preferences for veteran-owned businesses as well as minority and women-owned businesses in the beginning of the program. But everybody that's considered a small business will also be able to apply. We define small business as 100 employees or less.
Okay. And your colleague Josh Jensen is raising a concern that a lot of what is going to be coming out of this, or at least some of what's coming out of 2021, may be beneficial in the short run, but are you writing sort of a check for something that you can't cash a couple years down the line when there isn't as much federal support?
Yeah, this is an important issue to raise, and we've dealt with this. So first of all, the $25 billion that we got from the federal government, we're spending $12 billion of that this year. We're going to be spending $12 billion of that next year, in addition to last year's fundings that have not been spent yet. Though that dollar amount is going toward recovery mechanisms. And so, you know, certainly we're hopeful that, you know, through the balance of this year and the balance of next fiscal year, that we have fully recovered from the impact of COVID-19. In addition, these other items that we've increased, those items predominantly have been funded through state funds, which are recurring dollars that are coming in. As you know, there we have had a number of revenue enhancers that have been put into this budget. And so those, we're going to be, the additional funding is coming from that area. So, you know, a good portion, let's use education as an example. So in the education arena, huge increases, historic increases in education funding. $8.2 billion of that is from federal aid funds. That's one-time funding. The $3.1 billion is from state support, and that's going to be recurring support. So, you know, will the budget be different next year? Absolutely, because we're not going to have as much federal funding. You know, in areas where we're going to make sure that there's not going to be a cliff, that like in the childcare area and the education area, that commitment is still going to be there. We'll be funding it predominantly with state funds, however.
Let me ask your colleagues about that. Josh Jensen, does that assuage any concerns you have? What do you think?
You know, I have a lot of respect for Assemblymember Bronson and for Assemblymember Clark and all my colleagues, but it still has me concerned because people are going to become more comfortable and be expecting a lot of these programs. And when we talk about revenue enhancers, what we're talking about is raising taxes, raising fees. And so the predominant way we're doing it this year is through a millionaire's tax, which is, you know, it makes sense. People who have more should pay more. I understand that logic. But my concern with that tax increase is when we're raising taxes from 0.8% to just over 2%, these individuals have the means to live anywhere. They don't have to live in New York. They don't have to have their businesses in New York. They could easily pick up and move to a state where the fiscal situation is not as taxing on their pocketbook. And so at that point, it's not about getting that extra 0.8% or 2%, but now we could be losing the 8.82% that they're already paying. And people earning $1 million in the state pay the majority or a vast amount of the income tax that we currently receive, so that we're paying for these increases. And that way, we've raised the corporate tax on our small businesses. We're increasing the unemployment taxes. So while we may be making it easier on the income tax for middle-class workers, what we're doing is we're just going to be increasing the cost of living in New York State. And it is, yes, like Harry said, to pay for important programs, certainly early intervention, mental health, healthcare, education. These are all important things and all things that the state should be prioritizing. But my concern is as we want to keep these dollars flowing into these important programs, are we now going to make it tougher on the middle class in the future because high-income earners may decide New York's no longer the place for them to call home.
So Assemblymember Jensen, we're talking New York State's top income tax rate moves from what, 8.82 to 10.9, is that correct? Is that what I'm...
Yeah.
Okay. And Forbes has a piece comparing New York State and North Carolina. New York State had been at 8.82, as you mentioned, for the top income rate. North Carolina's top income tax rate, 5.25. North Carolina will cut its top income tax rate from 5.25 to 4.99. New York State goes up from 8.82 to 10.9. And Forbes points out New York State has one of the highest population losses on an annual basis. North Carolina, one of the highest inflow population rates. Do you connect that to taxation directly, Josh?
I mean, I think it has a large degree of it. I mean, when the governor had his no-press conference yesterday, he even said that we're taxing people out of New York State. And yes, he's talking about property tax, but it's also income tax. It's also the business taxes, corporate tax, franchise tax. So when you look at the tax burden that is affecting New Yorkers, I don't think anybody would say that we aren't in one of the highest taxed states in the nation. And based on GDP, we're top 10 globally. So that is a concern. And that's predominantly when I hear from the people I represent, the number one thing they're concerned about. You know, I did a survey earlier this year where I asked them for their number one issue. And the number one thing they asked for was saying that they want their taxes to go down and they want state spending to get under control. And you know, yes, to live in a civilized society where you have services that are needed and wanted, you have to find a way to pay for them. But my concern is, have we overburdened ourselves with this year's budget?
Sarah Clark, does that concern you? And frankly, let me start by asking, do you think population inflow and outflow for states, whether it's North Carolina, New York, is related to taxes?
I think there are a lot of people moving out in the middle. I mean, from what we have heard, the majority of the people that are moving out of the state are middle class folks who can't afford it, right? And I get that. I do get that our property taxes are high. I do get that feeling. It's not typically that those that we put a slightly higher tax on are those who can most afford it and make their money for the most part by living in New York City. It is they are not the ones that are necessarily being driven out by the high taxes. And what we needed to do is, if you take school aid and foundation aid, the underfunding of it has put the burden on our towns to raise that money through property taxes. What we're trying to do is say, you know, we need to make this a much more equitable system in terms of the resources going in from those who can most afford it, so that the burden doesn't continue to be on our property taxes.
Do you think over the next few years we can pay for everything that has been laid out this year?
And yes. So like Assemblyman Brownson said, what we did, most of the federal dollars are geared towards programs that are one-time costs, one-time recovery things that we may need, whether it's small business, whether it's extra money for our restaurants, rent relief, things like that. So that the hope is that we have started to really recover from the COVID crisis in itself. And then the extra state dollars that we're starting to bring in will take over anything that is ongoing. So if you look at education, just like Assemblyman Brownson was saying, the goal is some of those one-time funds that we are paying this year to help people in real need by next year can roll over and help pay for the extra increase in foundation aid. It's not going to be another burden of needing more revenue to do that. It's already sort of baked into what we see in the next 3 years.
Let me squeeze in a couple of listener questions, and this is Marie in Parenton. Go ahead, Marie.
First of all, comparing North Carolina and New York State is comparing apples and oranges. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But I read a speech that Schumer gave, and he outlined the fact that the impact on New York State and what was given is more like $100 billion. And what he outlined was very convincing. First of all, could you explain the revision to the Medicaid formula? I don't understand what. Apparently, it's trying to get New York State more on a level playing field with other states. And secondly, has any money been put aside for the rainy day fund?
Okay, Marie, thank you. Assemblymember Brownson, you want to hit the Medicaid formula?
Yeah, and the Medicaid formula, I can't give you the detail of how it has been adjusted, but through the federal package, there was some formula adjustments in order to help out New York State specifically. And the, you know, to the caller's point about the level of assistance coming to New York State, you know, we were just talking about the assistance that's going directly to the state. There's assistance going to localities and other entities directly. It's not going to flow through the state. What we've done in addition on the Medicaid is there's a program called 340B, which is a carve out. And the governor had proposed ending 340B program as a cost savings. We rejected that. I fought against it from day one with the help of my colleagues. This is a program that helps Trillium Health, Anthony Jordan, Strong Health. And what it does is it allows these organizations to buy prescription drugs at a reduced rate. The savings that they have then has to be dedicated to wraparound services like housing and transportation and other needs that some of our most vulnerable patients have. That would have cost the local clinic some $11 million. It would have cost Strong Health alone $30 million. And so there, we felt that it was important to maintain that level of services and not try to find savings through ending the 340B pharmaceutical program. We only got a two-year delay, so we're going to have to work on a way to continue to serve those folks, but in a different way. So that's one of the adjustments that were made in Medicaid, but there were more. And then, Evan, if I get a chance, I'd love to respond to the tax issue because I think we need a little bit more detail so people know.
Got to do it briefly. Go ahead. Green light, but do it briefly. Go ahead, Harry.
Okay, really, really simple. The high tax rate is on people who make $25 million or more. We're actually reducing taxes to 5.97% for people earning $43,000 to $161,000, as well as reducing taxes for those earning $161,000 up to $323,000. So our middle class folks are getting a tax reduction. In addition, they're going to get a break on their real property taxes, the circuit breaker, that will help reduce the level of their real property taxes, and we're dedicating $400 million to that. So there's actually tax cuts in this. We're cutting taxes for middle class workers and increasing taxes on people earning $1 million up all the way over $25 million.
Okay. Before we lose the hour here, real briefly here, because we're going to switch guests in just a second. Carrie writes to say, is the state Excelsior grant staying for college kids? Sarah Clark, can you hit that question?
So it is this year from I know there have been, I mean, I joined the Higher Education Committee this year. That was one of the committee assignments that I did get, which I'm really actually excited to be a part of. I've heard time and time again already some questions and some concerns around the Excelsior program and the way it operates and is it really doing what we need to do. What we did do this year was increase TAP for the first time ever in 7 years. So that's the funding that it's a $500 increase that will take the per person from $5,165 to $5,665, which is closing the gap between the amount you were getting for TAP and SUNY tuition. We've also increased the Bundy aid for independent colleges and universities and to help students. But the Excelsior program, I'd love if your listener has some concerns about it, because I do think there's a real appetite to really look at that and see if that's best serving the college affordability issue or if there's other things we should be doing.
That may be really merit its own conversation separately, sounds like, Sarah. Yeah.
Yep.
Carrie, I hope that helps. Thank you. And let me wrap up by asking Assemblymember Jensen, you know, you campaigned on trying to create a better business climate in New York State. Certainly no one can campaign knowing a pandemic's coming and businesses have been in real trouble. Are you happy with what you've seen in terms of this billion-dollar plan to help small businesses? Would you do something differently?
I mean, I can't say that I'm unhappy with our small businesses getting a $1 billion that they can help to keep their doors open, especially during a pandemic. But, you know, as a state, you know, working with Chairman Bronson and his committee assignment, certainly we need to be working to make sure small businesses can not just survive but continue to thrive once the pandemic hopefully comes to an end quickly. So certainly we do need to do more to support our small businesses. I know that I talked to a local business owner the other day, and he was talking about how, you know, he owns a restaurant bar, and the restrictions that he has on from the state make it terribly difficult. The curfew, the fact that everybody has to order food with a drink, and the fact that right now, because of the situation with unemployment, he cannot find people who are willing to come off unemployment and actually take a job. So his business is struggling. I know small businesses, not just our restaurants and bars, but, you know, people can work remotely. And, you know, if you can work remotely, some people may think it might be better to sit on a beach down in Florida than in an office. We're seeing that in New York City, and I'd hate to see that come to Rochester.
Well, we'll be exploring those questions and a lot more in days to come. Tomorrow we're talking to restaurant owners on this program. But for now, let's thank our guests as we get ready to break and welcome three new members. Some are new, but different guests from the New York State Assembly. Josh Jensen, thanks for the time. As always, thanks for making it for the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Sarah Clark, member of the New York State Assembly. We have scratched the surface. Much more to talk about soon. Thank you, Sarah.
So much more. Thank you for having me.
Harry Bronson, same. Thank you, Assemblymember Bronson. I hope we can talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This short break is the only one of the hour, and we come right back with Jen Lunsford, Stephen Hawley, Damon Meeks on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation with members of the New York State Senate about the New York State budget. What priorities did they bring to Albany this year? What passed and what didn't? What successes did they see? What failures? Senators Samra Brouk, Ed Rath, Jeremy Cooney, and Robert Ort joining us next hour on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. New York State has a budget, and with that budget, a statement of its priorities for the next year and beyond, and we've invited members of your local delegations. This hour, the Assembly. Next hour, the New York State Senate. And we expect to have Stephen Hawley in a moment soon, but let me also welcome who we do have on the line with us now, Jen Lunsford, a member of the New York State Senate. Well, the Senate. It's the Assembly, I think. It's still the Assembly.
Thank you, Val.
I was going to say, I just promoted you. I don't think it's a promotion. It's just different. Anyway, Assemblymember Lunsford, thank you. Yes. And Damon Meeks, a member of the New York State Assembly. Damon, welcome. Thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you.
We do have Stephen Hawley. Assemblymember Hawley, thank you for being with us. Thanks for taking time for the program.
Great to be here.
All right. Let me ask all three of you, as you see the recently passed budget, what stands out to you the most as either a priority that you had or an accomplishment that you see in this budget, or at least something that, that people ought to be thinking about as we go forward? Jen Lunsford, I'll start with you.
So I know that I'm coming after a few other guests who already talked about this, but truly, childcare is the crown jewel of this budget. This wasn't just relief money. This was real, systemic, generational, game-changing money to overhaul childcare. And I was very happy to see two of the bills that I'm carrying pass through. Also, fully funding foundation aid. You know, that's something we've been clamoring for, as Sarah Clark spoke about, for over 10 years now. That brought increases to every school in my district. We also secured pre-K funding for the first time for Penfield and Pittsford. Really huge childcare and school budget issues this year.
Damon Meeks, how do you see it?
Those are two very important things that Jen just mentioned, in particular, education. You know, Frederick Douglass stated it best, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And we must be intentional about putting funding, necessary funding, into education across New York State. As a former organizer with the Alliance for Quality Education, that's something that we advocated for, the campaign for fiscal equity. And, you know, it's finally coming home. And we're making it happen, $1.4 billion this year, and altogether $19.8 billion over the next 3 years. So that is absolutely necessary, and we're really excited to be able to be in a position to make these things happen.
Stephen Hawley, what's the big headline that came out of this session to you?
Well, there are a lot of headlines that came out of the budget session. Of course, the fact that it was almost a week late, but I guess better late than never in some ways. And specifically, we were very pleased to see that $94.1 million for library aid came in at the same amount as last year. We would have presumed that it might have been more, but it was great to see that come back. $538 million for CHIPS, Consolidated Highway Improvement Program for our roads and bridges, $100 million more than last year. Extreme Winter Recovery was $100 million. Bridge New York, $100 million, the same as last year. And $150 million for Paved New York, which is $50 million more than last year. We were also very pleased to see $35.8 million in agriculture and local assistance, $4 million more than last year, and a number of other items for the counties that I represent, which is Western Monroe, all of Orleans, and Genesee County.
Well, and let me ask you, Stephen, if I could. Last half hour, we had an interesting exchange between your Republican colleague Josh Jensen and your Democratic colleague Harry Bronson on taxes. Josh pointing out that raising the top tax rate in this state, the state income tax top level, from 8.82 to 10.9, his concern is that drives people away from the state that is already losing population. But Assemblymember Bronson pointed out that we're talking $25 million or more here. It's not a lot of people, and that most middle-class earners are going to see cuts. Do you see it that way? I mean, do you think raising the top taxes for someone who makes $25 million or more are going to convince New Yorkers who don't make that much to leave the state?
Well, it would be an interesting study, certainly, to find out where the million people that left New York State over the last decade fell in terms of their income. But this budget isn't just about increases in income tax for 1 to 5 million, from up to 9.65%, 5 million to 25 million, 10.3, and more than 25 million, 10.9%, which generates another 4.5 billion allegedly, and the corporate tax rate going from 6.5 to 7.25%. The real deal here is what are the incentives for people to A, stay here, and B, move here? With more taxes and more mandates and more fees, and the fact that people just are having a difficult time getting by, I think it's the wrong message. When we're trying to attract business to New York State to provide for good-paying jobs for our folks, they are not going to be running through sprinklers and other types of things to come to New York State with that corporate tax rate going up. So I think that this budget that went from about $180 billion up to $212 billion, an $18.7 billion increase from last year, is the wrong message at the wrong time, especially since we got $12.6 billion from the federal government. Where are we going to be next year when the federal government and Uncle Joe aren't there? We just can't continue to increase budgets. Florida has more people than we do. Texas has more people than we do. Combined, they have twice as many people. And combined, their state budgets don't even equal ours. Sadly, we're just behind California. We're number two in the largest budget. We have 19 million people, and California has 40 million. Something's wrong.
Well, let me ask Assemblymember Lunsford to respond. And I will say, Assemblymember Holly is raising maybe skepticism that the projected tax revenue from the top marginal earners in this state is too high. And I tend to agree. Rich people are very good at sheltering that money. I'm not sure that you'll get all of it that you think you're going to get. But, Jen Lunsford, what do you make of some of that?
Well, I'm going to try to break some of this down because that was the full list of all the talking points. So I'm going to go back a little bit. You know, there are studies that show where the people who left New York fell in terms of their income levels, and it was not millionaires. There are several studies that show that millionaires and ultra-millionaires don't move because of personal income tax. The people who move are actually poorer people because they're being gentrified out of their neighborhoods. When we look at the people who are going to be adversely impacted by these tax increases, remember also these are marginal tax increases on people earning seven-figure salaries per year. There's nobody in our district earning $25 million a year. So I'm not terribly concerned about the impact on people who can afford to absorb that tiny impact. One of the benefits of raising income tax on higher earners is it can lower your property tax. Because when we at the state level are able to better fund our counties and our local municipalities like we did in this budget, where we restored the governor's cuts to aid, to AIM funding, where we restored the extreme winter recovery program, many of the things that my colleague just referenced. We take that burden off of the counties and the localities that levy your property tax. So this is overall a benefit to middle and lower income tax earners. I think that this is the right thing that we should be doing in comparing us to Texas and Florida, who certainly do not have people-centered budgets, who do not have budgets that fund Medicaid or schools or any of the many programs that make New York a good place to live. It's just not a fair comparison.
Damon Meeks, I'll let you respond if you want on this before we move to some other things. Are you concerned about population loss and what the impact of some of the decisions regarding taxation of various different income levels are?
I am. And honestly, I don't feel that the revenue generated taxes that we moved forward with went far enough. I think that when we look at the numbers in the different counties, take Monroe County, for instance. I mean, those New Yorkers in Monroe County that are making, $300,000 plus annually makes up less than 1% of the whole population. I think that we could go a bit further as it relates to generating additional revenue. And as it relates to those who are leaving New York State, Jen hit the nail on the head. I mean, there are people who are struggling financially. If you go to New York City and just travel west on I-90 and you stop in Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, you find a number of people who live there are, moved there from New York City because they just could not afford it. And we're starting to see that here in these regions too, here in Western New York, where people just can't afford the cost of rent, and which is truly a challenge. So when we look at those who are leaving, more often than not, it's those who are working class and the poor that just cannot afford to stay afloat, and they're going to other places.
Okay. Now, Assemblymember Meeks, you told us, especially in the last year, as you approached your work in Albany, after you were elected, there was thoughts about not only a different approach to policing, but what you might be able to do in Albany in regards to support for mental health response and more. Can you tell me some of what, maybe some of what you and your colleagues have done in this regard, and if you feel it's sufficient?
As it relates to policing, I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I mean, we submitted different bills and different, legislation that some of it has yet to be passed. But I truly believe that we can pass the policies at the state level as well as local level of government, but we also have to be intentional about changing the culture of policing. We have to make it more of where those who are actually serving the community truly recognize the individuals that they work with as human beings and not the other, and they treat them as such. I think that's one of the major problems. We can sit there and recruit new police officers, but if you have the same old guard that says, hey, irregardless of what this manual says, this is how we do things here in Rochester, you'll continue to have some of the same issues that we tend to have here in Rochester. So I think, policy is one aspect, but truly changing the culture of policing in this community is needed. And we need to see a criminal justice system that works the same way for people, irregardless of, their background, their race, their zip code or what have you. With that being said, that was one of the reasons that, I supported the legalization of marijuana here in New York State. Because when you look at the history of the disparities in the criminal justice system, it's just not fair to black and brown communities. And with that being said, I mean, today I'm really trying to decompress, but I'm, glad to be on the show here today. But, I'm just coming from court following the matter that took place on December 18th, in which I was arrested while out videotaping a family being evicted. And, just to point out the disparities within the system, I was told today by Judge Yackman that either you go and get fingerprinted and get your mug shot on file or else you'll be arrested today in the courtroom. And when we left out of the courtroom and talking with some of the other individuals who were there pertaining to the same matter, one young white man who was also there, he was not fingerprinted, nor did they get a mug shot on file. But here I am as your state representative, and I was treated as such. So the reality of it is, and this is something that I know all too well, that it doesn't matter your status. But if you're an African-American in this community, you're treated one way versus your white counterparts. And that's just totally unacceptable. And, you know, with that being said, I'm committed to doing what I can do to change policy. But in the meantime, we also have to be intentional about the culture of this community.
Let me ask your Republican colleague, Assemblymember Hawley. You know, DeMond told us on this program, Stephen, that some of the work he had to do in Albany was to make sure that legislators understand the magnitude of the issue, of the problem as he sees it, and that hopefully that there would be a response to some of the issues, whether it's Daniel Prude, whether it's marijuana that we see here. And I'm curious, Stephen, do you believe that police, generally speaking, treat black people differently than white people?
Well, I can't comment on that certainly personally. I have not witnessed that in my district. And so I can't comment on that specifically. I can only say that there are exceptions to every rule, and that there are the amount of media attention being paid these days to some of the issues that have occurred. Isolated, I believe, incidents. Mr. Meeks may disagree with me, and I certainly respect him for that. But we have to respect one another regardless of where we live, what we do for a living, what the color of our skin is. These are things that are human, inbred into human beings, and I have not experienced that, nor have I witnessed any police activity that would be suspect in my district. So I think that all of this has to do with respecting one another, whether we agree or not, it has to be with respect. And there was a young lady, a new assemblywoman, who said that if we voted against the excluded workers fund, which provides $2.1 billion in this budget for undocumented workers because they didn't qualify federally, if we voted against it, we were nothing more than racist, xenophobic capitalists. And that kind of those kinds of comments don't do anything in terms of folks being able to get along together and respect each other. So I back the Blue. They have done a great job in my district and continue to do so.
Okay. Assemblymember Meeks, go ahead if you want to respond to that.
Well, I mean, I guess it goes back to, you know, the district that one stay in. You know, like you said, he doesn't see those type of things in his district. And I'm quite sure his district is probably, you know, majority as it relates to the population area, it's probably majority whites, and the police force is probably a majority of white police force. And, you know, with that being said, you know, there's probably a sense of community where people know the individuals that they're serving because they actually live in that community. And that's one of the things that we're going to push, and we're pushing for a residential requirement here in the city of Rochester. I think that changes the dynamics. For one, it will help us as it relates to the economics of the city of Rochester as far as the money taking immediate flight to the suburbs, but will also provide an opportunity for officers to live in the community and build relationships with individuals in the community. That was the practice some years ago where an officer can, you know, talk to you and know your last name and know exactly who your mom or dad was, and that posed a threat in itself. And if the officer was to make that call or take you home, you'd probably rather the officer, you know, take you down to the department because there were consequences to be paid. So I think that, you know, we definitely have to move forward with the residency requirement and change that practice and build communal relationships between the police department and the community in which they serve.
Assemblymember Lunsford, I actually recalled to mind when Assemblymember Hawley is saying, you know, in my district, we really don't see that. And so one thing that came to mind for me was, you know, your child care work. And I want to ask you about that, because when the Assemblymember was making that remark, I was thinking about, as I mentioned earlier this week on this program, two conservative figures who have spent a long time not only opposing publicly paid leave and family support, but also mocking it. And that's Meghan McCain and Jesse Waters of Fox News. And they both changed positions in the last couple of weeks. Meghan McCain became a mother recently, and she came out and said, boy, I had no idea how important maternity support was, and now my mind has changed. Jesse Waters said that he said this week he used to mock men who wanted paternity leave because he thought it was soft. And now he's a dad and he wants the full at least 6 weeks, and he wish he has a whole different perspective. He wished that this and it's, I guess I'm, you know, for me, it's like, can we not envision what life is like outside of what's going on? You know, when Dick Cheney said, oh, I have a lesbian daughter, I support same-sex marriage now. You know, it's nice, but, you know, we do need to try to work and figure out, you know, what are the right approaches, even if we're not directly impacted. And I think that some of what you said that you wanted to get done with childcare, and I am curious to know if you think you got it done, and frankly, given what your colleagues on the Republican side have told us this hour, if it can be paid for.
I do. And I think that history is replete with these examples of people needing to have the lived experience to understand what a problem is. And we had a child care crisis in this state before the pandemic came. And I think now with so many people who had remote schooling, so many people who lost child care slots, we're now seeing that child care really is an economic issue. It really is a broader issue that doesn't just affect children, doesn't just affect families. It affects our whole workforce. So by having us forced as a society to look this crisis square in the face, we took real bold action to fix it. And it's unfortunate, I think, that so many of us can't just trust the people with the lived experiences, like my colleague Damon Meeks, when they tell you that something is wrong and they tell you that not only has it happened to them, but it happened to the people of their district, to say, I don't see it, is probably more of a reflection of you and your experiences than it is a reflection on them and their experiences. And then you see that in childcare, you see that in school. You're seeing that, I think, all across the issues during this pandemic. We see it also with environmental issues. As the climate change becomes more visible to us, something that we can touch and feel, you're seeing a bigger uptick in people who are concerned about those issues. You know, I was very glad to see that we finally passed through the Mother Nature Bond Act for $3 billion in environmental bonds that you'll see on the ballot this November. And it's because we are, again, faced with the reality of these issues. We have to touch them to feel them.
And okay, so Assemblymember Hawley, do you think New York State should have supported what your colleague Jen Lunsford is saying when it comes to child care support that she has pushed so hard for? Did you support that, and are you comfortable with it going forward?
Yeah, I don't have the bills in front of me, but I certainly appreciate Ms. Lunsford supporting child care issues. Those are very, very serious. I have folks in my district, of course, who have those issues, and especially during the pandemic, it became very, 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 very concerning and prevalent. How do you have both folks working and have children at home? So I would have to look at the specific bills to comment on it. But in terms of my district versus the entire state of New York, whether it's Rochester, the city, or sure, Albany, or New York City, every year I bring up folks from different districts to my district, so that they can understand what it is to live in Western New York, especially some of the more rural areas. They spend a day with me, and then I go down with them to their districts. I've been to the Bronx with Mike Benedetto. I've been to Queens with Mike Dundecker, Mike Cusick from Staten Island. So I try to reach out to folks who represent different parts of the state so that they understand what it is that the New Yorkers that I represent, what their needs, wants, and desires are, and vice versa. I go down and visit with them to see what their needs, wants, and desires are. That's the way to be an effective state assembly person. And so I would encourage all of my members to try to do similar types of things so that we understand, know, and acknowledge what the different needs are.
Okay. And final 30 seconds, Assemblymember Meeks, if you want to pick up from there, go ahead.
Yeah, I know Member Hawley mentioned earlier about the $2.1 billion for undocumented workers, and I voted for excluded workers. I don't remember saying anything about undocumented workers in the legislation, but as it relates to that, $1.8 billion of that $2.1 billion will go towards you know, workers who have an I-10 on file, meaning that they actually pay taxes and they're, you know, part of our workforce, our labor force. And I think we need to be, you know, mindful of that, even as it relates to those farmers in the rural areas of Western New York, the dairy farmers. I mean, they're dependent on excluded workers to, you know, do their day-to-day course of work. So I think that is definitely necessary to help those families who have basically been out in the cold during this pandemic.
Assembly members Meeks, Hawley, and Lunsford. DeMond Meeks, thanks for making time for the program today.
Thank you.
Stephen Hawley,
thank
a pleasure.
So
thank you, Stephen.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Jen Lunsford, who knows when we'll talk again? Maybe tomorrow.
We'll see.
Assembly member Jen Lunsford. And we've got members of the New York State Senate with us next hour.